asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
I'm Matt.
And today we're talking junking fees, costly casas, and procrastination penalties.
That's right. And when we say junking fees, we're using junking as a verb, as in trashing or tossing out. When I was a kid growing up in our house, we used the word pitch. When it came to throwing something away, we'd be like, oh, don't pitch that.
That's also what a soccer field is called, the pitch.
The pitch. A ship can also pitch out in the ocean
right?
as well. Yeah, like, hey, I'm going to pitch these leftovers. And I'm like, no, I'll eat those. but I realized, I actually learned recently that that wasn't a term that most folks use.
Yeah.
For throwing away.
Toss it out, throw it out, pitch it out. Yeah,
pitch.
I don't think, it's like they calling things soda. Down here in the South, we call everything Coke.
Yeah, and
it's like
Coke, baby.
What kind of Coke would you like? Would you like a Pepsi?
Is it a
vernacular
thing?
That's a kind of Coke down here.
Maybe it's an Augusta thing.
Maybe, that could be.
I don't know if it is or not.
it's its own thing over there, that's for sure.
Probably not. But yeah, this is our Friday flight. We're going to talk about our favorite headlines, our favorite stories that we came across this week, and how they're going to pertain to your personal finances, to your money. But Joel, real quick, I have a shopping tip for all the listeners out there.
Bring it.
This spring, we've been working out in the garden, doing some landscaping. And a part of that work that we're doing involves installing an arched trellis or an arched arbor that's going to go over a path.
Mm-hmm.
Kate had found one. We're kind of creating like an English garden. That's what Kate calls it. Thus, the trellis.
Well, the beginnings look good from what I've seen.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I appreciate that. But Kate had found one of these things, and it was kind of expensive. I think she had found it at West Elm. And
oh, yeah. Not a cheap store.
It's not the Aldi of home furnishings. I'll say that. But we used, it's called Google Lens. So some folks call it like the reverse Google image search.
Mm-hmm. Which I've heard of, but I don't think I've ever actually used it.
So the way it works is you can find an image typically that's on the internet, and so you either take a screenshot, save it to your desktop, whatever, but go to Google and you click and drag that image into the search bar, and it'll search for other instances of that image on the web.
Oh.
And in particular, you can use that with more factory issued basic images. And so, you know, not the image of the trellis in a garden where it looks more custom, but kind of the factory image with a white background.
Okay.
And by doing that, we were able to find that exact same trellis under, it may have even been under a different name, being sold on Amazon for $90 cheaper.
Ooh,
just by doing the, I always call it reverse image lookup or reverse image searching, but it's called Google Lens. That's their official term for it.
That's a good tip. So if you get the picture, but you don't have like any more identifying details, that's a good way to kind of see if you can get a lower price.
Search it up. Yeah, cool. Kate, she's done this before. She's done this actually with shoes. Like she had a pair of shoes she knew that she was looking for. did a reverse image search, and actually she didn't find the exact same pair, but found a pair that looked really, really, really similar. It had the same colors and everything. And so she thought, well, I'm willing to save like a ton of money.
Give those a shot.
And get this other pair of shoes instead, and it's totally worked out. But yeah, so that's how you do it. You either take a screenshot if you're on the computer, or if you can kind of like save the image to your desktop. I've never tried it on a mobile device, always on where I can drag the image from the desktop. But if that is something that you think might be handy, that's how you do it. Give it a shot. It might save you some money.
For sure. All right. Google Lens. Yeah. That's a good tip. All right. Let's move on, Matt. Let's get to the Friday Flight sampling of stories. And first, we're going to talk about junk fees and the potential junking of those junk fees.
How you can junk those.
You can pitch
junk
them.
Fees. You can pitch them.
If you want.
That's how you do it.
Well, and so there's the government is actually looking to tackle annoying junk fees. And I guess the question is, should they be? Politicians have junk fees in their sights. This is, I would say, some state politicians are looking into this, especially in the state of California. But President Biden actually addressed junk fees. He took them head on in his State of the Union address a few weeks back. I don't know if we mentioned this. I don't really watch those things. They kind of bore me. Lots of standing ovations. And they're getting even weirder these days, let's be honest. So best to avoid the State of the Union, no matter who is speaking. But it is actually a winning political issue because 96% of Americans find junk fees annoying. What kind of fees are we talking about? We're talking about resort fees that hotels charge, Ticketmaster fees, which are definitely the worst. Like, I don't know of any worse fee than a Ticketmaster fee just because of the pure markup, the insane markup that they add to basically anything that you buy. Fees that car rental companies add on, and even like phone and internet fees. I'll be the first to tell you, I don't like fees. And I wish that companies were more upfront with when it comes to the fees they charge, were more transparent. I think more transparency is a good thing. It helps us all make better financial decisions. But I'm also not completely against every single fee that exists. I am worried that maybe going this route would actually eliminate some fees that actually result in saving us money overall.
Well, if it eliminates competition, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's how some of these different businesses are able to charge less, is by not making you pay for the full package, essentially.
They set themselves apart by lowering the initial price and having some fees, but you kind of
maybe... It's a la carte.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you get to pick and choose. Like, it makes me think of the airline industry, right? Like Spirit, they charge a lot less for airfare, but then they'll fee you for all sorts of things.
Lots of things.
But if you jump through the hoops, then you can stand to get to your destination for a lot less money than what you'd pay with a full fare airline. And so I'd hate to see the different government regulations force all of these airlines to sell tickets in the same exact way, even if I am incredibly fee adverse, because the total cost is what I'm looking at. So essentially what we're talking about here is the pricing structure, because, you know, charging more fees and the ability, again, for these companies to unbundle the price, that can be a way to actually help the consumer to spend less overall. But since there's not any government action that's being taken yet, avoiding junk fees is going to be completely in your hands. And so do your due diligence first. Call the hotel before you book online. Figure out what those fees are going to be, in addition to maybe what the headline price is going to be.
Yeah.
Avoid businesses who levy different fees whenever possible. Of course, unless that fee is going to actually save you money down the road on the overall cost. And, you know, if you find that you feel that you have been unfairly saddled with a fee that honestly just seems unjust, if it seems unfair, well, that's a complaint that you can take directly to the Better Business Bureau, or even the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and they aggregate those. If there are enough complaints with a particular industry or with a specific company, then that's something that they can look into to make sure that these companies are treating their customers fairly.
Yeah, the CFPB often holds those people, those businesses, to account and makes them at least come up with a good explanation. Oftentimes they will refund that fee if you make that complaint, if it's an egregious fee. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out here. Right now, you're kind of in charge of battling junk fees in your own life. Is there help coming down the road? Maybe. And some of that help might be warranted, but I guess I'm worried too about maybe overreach and kind of changing the way some of these companies operate, which actually do allow us to, like you said, that unbundling, that a la carte, it can allow us actually to save more if we're savvy.
You can be choosier with what it is that you're consuming. And ultimately, I mean, we would rather see just businesses make their own decisions and then allow their profit-seeking motives to then determine what it is that they continue with. Because customers decide with where and how it is that they spend their money.
Because let's be honest.
If you're doling out all these fees and folks like it, though, because it allows them to pick and choose or to customize or, in some instances, to really downgrade their service, but they're able to essentially get the bare minimum, well, that's a business that's going to do well as opposed to something that feels more all-inclusive.
Yeah, I mean, if you could get to Europe for $150 round trip,
but you had to stay in the whole time,
yeah,
would you do it?
I think I probably would. Like, that's the kind of thing. Like, I know some people might say that should be illegal. That's just wrong to do that to customers. But I'm like, nah, I'd probably sign up for that because it would save me a lot of money.
Well, yeah, and there's trade-offs, right? Because when you're younger,
and it might not be for everyone, then they can opt to pay more.
Exactly. Like when you're like our age, I'm like, all right, maybe I'm gonna get the ticket that that actually has an assigned seat. But seriously, imagine how many like 20-something-year-olds or even teenagers would say,
completely.
Oh, I would most definitely take the, like, everybody just, it's like a cargo plane. Everybody,
it's like a subway. You're holding onto the bar up top, you know?
That would be awesome. And I totally would have done that in college.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about housing for a second, because speaking of government help, it looks like there's going to be more aid for first-time homebuyers coming up in the near future. The White House, they announced last week that they're going to reduce mortgage insurance fees. So they are serious about getting rid of some of these junk fees, at least. And this is going to save the average homebuyer something like $800 a year. And that would reduce monthly insurance costs for people with FHA insured loans by about $70 on a $270,000 loan. Those numbers are specifically according to the Wall Street Journal. This will apply to FHA loans starting on March 20th. So that's coming up later this month. And again, like, we don't have a soft spot for fees. We have done episodes about why we hate fees and why we want you to fight back on fees in your life. And I like to see this money being put back in the hands of the people, specifically when it comes to mortgage insurance, which is expensive. But I will say one of the downsides of this is I think a lot of people were touting this as a way that it's going to help housing affordability. And $800 a year it's not nothing, but it's also considering how much rates have gone up, how much home prices have gone up. It's a drop in the bucket, really, of kind of what we're dealing with overall.
Sure. And it feels more like a Band-Aid as opposed to getting to or addressing like the underlying causes, right?
Still, because I like it, but it's limited in scope.
Yeah, yeah. And so you kind of mentioned this, but as rates have risen, we just haven't seen home prices correct. We haven't seen them drop as much as some folks predicted. And so buying a house, it's still a really expensive endeavor. And honestly, like, that's larger because we still don't have enough supply, right? Like, the only real way, like, again, addressing the underlying issue here, the biggest way to solve the problem of housing affordability is to build more units. Oddly enough, a lot of folks believe that building more is actually going to cause prices to go up, but that goes against the most basic reality of economics. More supply is going to bring the supply and demand continuum back into balance. And so the way that we get there is, like, the best answer is going to be to change zoning laws that prohibit building in lots of cities around the country. I think, you know, we need to reduce building obstacles, and that's certainly one way for us to increase the number of new starts. I mean, we're still at all-time lows. Basically, we've only seen that drop since the Great Recession, since the housing crisis in 07, 08.
Yeah, I saw a poll recently. Something like 30 to 40% of people think that building more homes is going to make costs go up, which flies in the face of everything we learned in econ, you know, in ninth grade or 10th grade, whatever that was. And so, yeah, it just amazes me that we still have a wrong-headed view. And you're right. Part of that is just kind of zoning laws preventing some of the building that needs to take place. Another reason that homes cost so much more is because they're so much bigger than they used to be.
Oh, yeah.
If you contrast like a home built in the 70s versus a home that's built today, it's almost like comparing apples and oranges or apples and cucumbers or something like that, because they're vastly different.
They're so much bigger now.
Yeah.
In the 70s, I think the median house was something like 1,500 square feet.
Uh-huh.
And today, we're looking at an average of like median household size of 2,500 square feet.
Yeah.
Much, much bigger.
Yeah. And so that is going to, of course, we like to say, oh, the home prices have gone up by this and such amount, but when you're talking about something that's twice as big, it kind of makes sense that they've gone up at the rate that they have. And new homes that cost $200,000 or less, they're just not being built. They've gone from something like 40+% of the market in 2010 to literally 0% of the market now.
Such a crazy
stat. Which is shocking. So like, where are all the $200,000 homes at? Well, they don't exist anymore.
They literally don't exist.
At least new homes. And yeah, there aren't many used homes, I guess. At least in the Atlanta area where we live, certainly not in like the most expensive markets. But I mean, even new homes that cost less than $300,000 are hard to find these days. And there are a few factors why. Like inflation is certainly part of the equation. So is the fact that homes, like I said, are just larger and there just aren't enough of them. That supply issue remains a major problem. But at the same time, I think builders are actually incentivized to build nicer kind of HGTV-esque luxury homes that cost more money because that's how they're able to, there are bigger profit margins mm-hmm. in those homes. And so buying a home is just tough sledding these days. And if we really want to make a dent in it, I think we have to look local to when it comes to building codes and some of those zoning laws that are really prohibiting increased density and just that are the NIMBYism that's preventing building units in the first place in a lot of places too.
Yeah, and I think there is a lot of room though when it comes to the ability for us to curb our own enthusiasm for these larger, nicer homes.
Yeah.
I think you hit the nail on the head with the HGTV-ification of our homes. And actually, so I looked this up because I was curious. There's something like 90 home renovation shows currently.
Oh, wow.
I just did a quick basic search.
That sounds right to me.
That's insane.
I think my mom has watched every one of them.
It's like an American pastime now.
Yeah.
At this, like, in quite literally, it's watching TV. It's the majority of Americans' top hobby. And so when you consider there are this many shows on TV and people love watching TV, it's no wonder that folks, that we are basically brainwashing ourselves into thinking that we need these nicer luxury homes. It kind of makes me think back to the pandemic. So you remember when we didn't have, like, chips were in short supply, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there were
potato chips,
microprocessing transistors, all that. There was a limited number of car models that could actually get built. And the different car manufacturers, what models did they prioritize?
The expensive.
The nicest ones.
Big old SUVs.
The big ones that drive all the profits. Same, like, think about even electric vehicles. The number of high-end luxury electric vehicle EVs that are on the road today dwarf the number of affordable electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tesla, they put something like 1 million Teslas on the road last year, and Chevy Bolt, something like 20,000.
Oh, wow.
Same thing with like Nissan Leaf. It's a fraction of the nicer, higher-end models that drive all the profits. And so I guess what I'm saying is, like, I'm not faulting Tesla, nor am I faulting home builders for building these nicer homes. It comes down to us. And just because they're being built, that doesn't mean, oh, I can't help myself, I'm going to buy this thing. It comes down to our ability, I think, to make decisions for ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Like what we think is going to be best, not just for our family, because I would say, oh, yeah, bigger, nicer home, that's going to be nicer for my family. I got to look at my finances as well. And that's, we want more folks to look at their entire financial situation and make the best decision based on that. I mean, you know, that doesn't mean it's easy to find a home, but it is still up to us to find those more affordable homes, in particular, pre-existing homes,
yeah.
Homes that are older, that aren't brand new, because those new home builders want to sell and get out to market those big, nice luxury ones that drive all the profit.
Yeah, we need more homes. And you're right, folks who are looking for homes, because these were stats about newly built homes.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't usually call them used homes. We just like think of all homes as the same. But like we should think about buying a used home, because there actually are homes that are $200,000 or less, at least in some parts of the country, right, that are used. Even though no new homes are being built, they're going to fit that price point. You will be able to find used homes. And yeah, I think that's an important thing for people to consider. Also, I know that this isn't a great suggestion. A lot of people don't want to hear it, but renting, right? A lot of people opt to keep renting largely because
still an option.
Home prices continue to be a major pain. And even though like rents have gone up quite a bit in the past few years, renting still makes more sense than buying for lots of folks. And when renters take the extra that they would have forked over to buy and maintain a home and they shovel it towards their investment accounts, they can do incredibly well. I think we underestimate how renters can build wealth in this country, largely because of the gap between what they would spend to buy a home and all of the other associated costs. But if you want to spend even less on rent, I saw this interesting story in USA Today about what they called renting on standby. I thought it was super interesting. There's this company called Landing. They offer a standby membership. I told my sister about it right away because I knew she was going to be interested in this.
This is totally up her alley.
Yeah. Because it lets renters pick a fully furnished 1, 2, or 3-bedroom apartment in 375 different cities around the country for $1,295 per month, which It's pretty real, pretty reasonable considering where rents have gone recently.
Well, and considering it's fully furnished, right?
Fully furnished.
Like, this sounds like the perfect thing for somebody who's straight out of college.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they were still in the dorm, or maybe they came from an apartment that they shared with a few other friends and they don't have any furniture. Dude, this is the way to do it.
Yeah. Nomad style living right here. Yeah. There's no security deposit, no lease, no utility cost, which sounds also like utilities are included in that too. Pretty incredible.
Unreal.
Here's the thing. You might be forced, though, to move with just 72 hours of notice. And so if you are living that digital nomad life to the max and you want to visit different cities on the reg and you don't mind moving often, this thing called Landing Standby could be a good fit for you. We'll pop a link in the show notes so you can check it out. I think there's a lot of people that this sort of, like, if they're flexible, if they're minimalist, living with very few possessions, and they don't mind kind of picking up, moving on a dime, it's not going to cost them a lot in moving costs.
Cause it's sounds
not like
adventurous.
They're loaded down. Yeah, exactly.
I like this.
For a certain type of person, certain phase of life, I think this, like, standby renting could actually make sense.
Yeah, I love it, man. It's not going to be for everybody, but I just love that this is an option for folks out there. Also, something that may not be for everybody, the 4-day work week. It depends, I guess, on the company that you're working for, but we're going to talk about that and the potential for that coming to your employer, plus a few other stories. We'll get to all of that right after the break.
Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week
at the beach.
Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. All right, the Friday flight keeps rolling along. Matt, we've got more stories to get to. A lot of interesting personal finance content this week that we have to talk about. But of course, as always, we have to get to the ludicrous headline of the week.
Of course.
That's how we start off segment two here. And this one comes from Vox, and the headline reads, "The Death of the Customer Service Hotline." And that's kind of where the headline stopped. But the writer explained that essentially companies have eliminated customer service and they're getting rid of it. It's a cost center and they don't necessarily want to offer a phone number and employees at the ready to help you with your problem. A human being that you can talk to about your problem, is it's something that our parents enjoyed, but not something that we're going to get to enjoy. And so, yeah, basically just cost the company too much money that they think can be better spent elsewhere. And this writer, she makes the argument that this is bad for us as consumers and bad for companies alike. So I'm curious to hear what you think. Is this good or bad that companies are eliminating customer service hotlines and our ability to get in touch with them to get a problem resolved?
Good or bad, it kind of makes me think of it's like frugal or cheap, right? Like this is a business edition frugal or cheap, because it makes sense, right? These different companies, they're trying to cut costs. The most expensive way to keep in touch with customers is by having an actual person in order to talk to. But then you move to call centers, then you move to like folks who are just sitting there operating the chat now. And yes, by reducing their expenses, these different companies are going to see a boost to their corporate profits, right? And so that's sort of the negative, pessimistic view. But don't forget, these are the same changes. Like this is the same kind of progress that makes goods more affordable. Like just think about the declining cost of certain electronics that we've all been able to pay less for over the past number of decades, right? And I think a lot of that has to do with the ability of these companies to scale, right? Like globalization and the ability to streamline. I think what these companies have realized is that that is not something that we do really care all that much about. Because if we did, we would, this kind of goes back to what we're talking about with the fees. Are the fees good or bad? Just like, well, it kind of depends. Is it a good thing to have great customer service? Well, it depends. It depends on the industry. But bottom line, if it's not something that folks are willing to pay for, then companies are going to start removing that as an option from what it is they offer, right?
It makes me think of recently I had like a little issue with our Instagram. And we've had spam imposter impersonators, right? And they've been reaching out to How to Money listeners. And
by the way, how.2moneypod.
Yeah.
They're fake. Don't let them follow you.
Yeah, they're fake.
They're going to hit you up and they're going to say that they've got an investing scheme. A lot of red flags should be going up.
Yes. And so please report that account. I'm trying to reach out to Instagram, and there used to be an email address where you could reach out for customer support. They have disabled that. And so now there's no possible way to get customer support. And although it seems like if you pay for the verification now, that might come with it. I'm not sure to the level at which you're going to get customer support, but it kind of feels like Instagram is forcing at least some users to pay a monthly fee in order to get any sort of response when they have issues. And so, I don't know. I think I'm okay with getting rid of some of these customer service hotlines. Like I think Frontier Airlines is one of them that just said, hey, we're done with that. And finding ways that people actually like to communicate with customer service, but ditching it altogether and not allowing people any path to get their issue resolved, I think that's a problem.
Yeah, as long as the systems that they have set in place work, then I think folks are fine not actually talking to somebody. But oftentimes, you're going to have to pay like a premium for that really high level of customer service. And ultimately, that leads to people talking about some of those brands. Like, again, I'm thinking about like Darn Tough Socks. The warranty and the customer service and how they back their products, well, that's great. But not everyone is willing to pay $20 for a pair of socks. Like, I'm not even willing to pay that for every single pair of socks that I own. But maybe for the occasional like nice pair, I'm like, all right, maybe I'll splurge, and slowly over time I'll find my way owning more of those socks. But basically, I think if companies are offering a premium product like that and customers are talking about it, those companies will be rewarded, and that'll communicate to maybe other companies who are cutting corners that they need to up their game a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's just one more thing that is going to cause people to think twice before they do business somewhere. Does this company have a decent reputation for customer service? Do they actually even offer any sort of customer service or not?
That's right, man. But here's a catch, though. You don't always have to pay a premium for the higher quality product, because J.D. Power, they just released their wireless ratings. And they picked Mint Mobile as their top MVNO carrier. That's mobile virtual network operator. Some mad props to Mint Mobile. We've been singing their praises for years now. And specifically, J.D. Power, they highlighted Mint's their transparency and their continued price reductions. Those are two things that we love to that we love to hear. You know, there's other great low cost options too, but you gotta love it when the cheapest plan on the block also comes with superior customer service. Yeah. That's something that Mint's been offering, and just a great way for you to slash a recurring bill, bill that you see every single month.
Yep, agreed. So it doesn't always come with trade offs. Getting good customer service or getting a lower price. I think that's one of the things that looking at these independent surveys from places like Consumer Reports or from J.D. Power can really help us make better calls when it comes to the companies we do business with. You know what I miss? Consumer Reports used to have
walking into a store and buying your cell phone plan that way.
No.
See, that's one of the ways that it was able to innovate.
True.
Because they're saying that like we don't need to do that anymore. You got to be able to maybe forecast a little bit to what it is that folks are looking for.
Yeah. You're planning ahead.
Sorry, but
I was going to say, Consumer Reports used to have a blog called The Consumerist. Forest, and they used to rank the worst companies in the world every single year. And that was just...
That's right. When did they stop doing that? I remember that.
It was probably like 6 or 7 years ago. It was a huge bummer because they were just... They were kind of like the fun, edgy side of Consumer Reports.
Yeah.
And I wish that was still around because that was just such a good way for people to be tipped off to which companies...
Who to look out for.
...suck really bad and offer pretty much continually bad customer service. And so, yeah, if I... had one wish this year, Consumer Reports, bring back that blog.
Bring it back.
It was so good. But Matt, let's move on. Let's talk about work-life balance for a second. Are 4-day work weeks going to become the new normal? We'll see. If trial runs in Great Britain have anything to say about our future, though, and the potential of a 4-day work week to become more of a reality for lots of folks, the answer could be yes, because 61 companies ran a 4-day work week experiment over the second half of last year, and 56 out of those 61 are opting to keep it around.
Them's is good odds right there.
Yeah,
that's
great odds.
Of,
I think that's 92%, right? Something like that. So revenue for companies apparently stayed at about the same level, while more employees stuck around and remained as productive as they had been working 5 days a week. And so, I don't know, I think you actually mentioned this, Matt, recently, Parkinson's Law, which basically states that, maybe even last week, work expands to fill the time available for its completion. That's what Parkinson's Law means. And that obviously has limitations, right? You can't create a 30-minute podcast episode in 15 minutes, that would be impossible, unless you just wanted us to...
Defies the laws of time.
Yeah, I guess we could, and then just like slow ourselves down by half speed, but that would be a bad product. But with flexible work arrangements becoming more common and positive 4-day experiences being reported, including 70% fewer reports of employee burnout when they made this transition to the 4-day work week, I'm not going to be shocked to see more companies going in this direction.
Yeah, you know, and we've already seen workaholism on the decline. Research shows that the pandemic, it gave a lot of folks a wake-up call, especially among the highest earning folks out there who were also working the most hours every week. Derek Thompson, he refers to it as the breaking of the workism fever that it seemed that so many of us were under the spell of. So bottom line, like, we think that work is a good thing, right? It helps us to pay the bills, but it also provides meaning. It provides a sense of community for a lot of folks. Doing away with work altogether, like, that would not be a good thing. That would lead to a happy population.
Yeah.
But working less, that would be a good thing for most folks. And we are seeing more folks choose to work less on purpose. British economist John Maynard Keynes, he theorized that we would all be working just 15-hour work weeks at this point. But our desire to consume has outpaced technology in our desire to work less and the advancements that we've seen in our society. So the more that we can keep our spending and desires in check, well, the more say that we're going to have over our own work schedules and our futures. It kind of goes back again to the size and niceness of homes. We don't need to have the most luxurious countertops or I mean, just all the things that go into the expensive homes these days.
Those are trade-offs, right? And you're
exactly.
Like, if you want the shiplap on every wall,
go for it.
Joanna Gaines style.
As long as you know what it is that you are, that you're signing up for. This is the life that you're signing up for.
Yeah, John Maynard Keynes just wasn't factoring in just how much we want our lifestyles to improve and how we don't mind working for that,
yeah.
I guess.
And so, how cool everything's going to be in the future that we're going to want to buy.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about investing for just a second, Matt, because if you're an investing procrastinator, which means you haven't met your goal for those 2022 IRA contributions, you still got time to make it happen. You've got until the filing deadline, which is April 18th, to get money in for last year. For a lot of folks in California, it's actually October 16th, I believe, because of some of those winter storms. But because there's actually a cap on what you can stick into a traditional or Roth IRA, it always makes sense to prioritize last year's bucket before you start socking dollars into the account for the current calendar year. So we don't want you, if you haven't maxed out 2022 Roth contributions, we don't want you putting money in 2023 yet, right? So this is just like a friendly PSA for you folks who like to wait till the last minute. It's the last minute. We're getting there, right? And so stock that money in. And if it was your goal to max out that account, check and see if you've actually done it and funnel some of those dollars into the 2022 version of your IRA to meet that goal.
Yeah, and the truth is, man, there are actual material downsides of procrastinating when it comes to your investments. And, you know, I'm not here to throw shade, but just trying to tell the truth. Because while the person who maxes out their Roth IRA this month for last year, they're still doing an awesome thing for their future, right? They're still getting those 2022 contributions in, mm-hmm. but it's not going to be quite as impactful as if they had done it in January of last year, because we're talking about missing out on months of compounding returns. That's going to magnify this mistake. And the Times, they just detailed how much it is that you actually lose over time by delaying your investment until the last minute. By waiting just 16 months to get those dollars in there, you're going to lose roughly $6,500 in returns over the first decade, $18,000 after two decades, and then $39,000 after three decades. So our recommendation would be, yeah, go ahead and stick that money in for 2022, but fully funding those accounts earlier in future years is certainly a good goal to have. And the fact is, when they ran those calculations, Joel, they were basing it off of a 6% rate of return.
Could be even more if we've got historic return rates.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the past 30 years, you're looking at an average annualized return of 10% with inflation, right? You're only looking at 8%. But that's an even larger disparity between what it is that you could have earned had you gotten your money in first thing as opposed to waiting 16 months later.
Yeah. So it's still better late than never. But at the same time, I think it is good to try to get on that cycle where you're funding your retirement accounts earlier in the year, because that gives your money more time in the market, which means if we're looking at historical numbers and the reality that the market goes up more years than not, that money's just going to have longer to work on your behalf, earning you a lot more money over time.
That's right. Yeah. And for that $6,500 Roth IRA contribution next year, what that means is you setting aside, I think, right around $540 every single month, starting 2 months ago. Starting in January. So yeah, you can do that math on your own time.
Yeah. And if you've got the money sitting in there and you're like planning just to dole that out over the year, you could do that. But the truth is, when you look at the numbers too, getting in the earlier the better, right? And so you could max it out now, be done with it, and then do the same right in January of next year for that, the current year. But all right, Matt, let's talk about how much should the Tooth Fairy pay for a second, because I feel like I'm over here paying 1998 rates.
Quick warning for all of our parents out there who might have young ears, young listeners nearby. Yeah. We're not going to get nasty or anything here, but just if you're looking to keep the magic alive for a little bit longer, just
pause.
Just a warning.
Pause. Yes. But so basically, the new rates came out for what the Tooth Fairy is paying, the Tooth Fairy Index.
There you go. Okay.
And the
third party Tooth Fairy.
Yes. And the average payout has risen 16% year over year, which means that the typical kid is getting $6.23 each and every time they lose a tooth.
So crazy.
Yeah. The Tooth Fairy where we live does not pay that. And I'm not sure if I'm a monster because of it. What do you think?
It comes down to the reason, like, why do we do this, right? Like, I mean, we pay money for lost teeth. We do it because it's tradition, essentially, right? Like, it's a fun thing to do. It's a way that we mark the occasion. It's not because there's an actual an open market where, where there's like exchanging going on and like what actual lost teeth are going for. It comes down to what parents are, you know, and we already gave the warning, but it comes down to what parents are choosing to give their kids, right? Like, it's a rite of passage, essentially. And so I'm not going to hate on folks if they want to give their kids that much money per tooth. But personally, I'm in like early 90s. like, take me back in the Wayback Machine, dude, because we're paying out $1
all right,
every time.
We do $1.25 plus a Kinder Egg, which is super fun, but I guess that's about a grand total of $2.25. So we're definitely at like a third of current rates of what the Tooth Fairy is doing. And actually, when you look at the index, the Tooth Fairy payouts go up actually kind of in tandem with the S&P 500, but even more, which is, I'm surprised to see that. But
if there was an actual tooth market, you'd probably start hearing advertisements for used teeth, like you do gold, investing in gold, perhaps.
Seriously.
Neither one of which are investments that we recommend.
I don't think parents should see that and feel the pressure to dial up.
No. Yeah, literally, we pay $1 and we are completely fine and comfortable with that, because, again, it comes down to not an actual going rate, but what it is that you decide, right? And I don't think we should feel the pressure maybe from other parents to follow suit and pony up.
You ain't got to keep up with the Joneses in this
regard. No. But then, you multiply that times however number of kids you have, dude, that's a lot of money.
You're paying.
Like, how many teeth do baby teeth do you end up losing? I don't even know.
Oh, too many? Too many at that price point.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But that's,
if I was a kid, I'd be like going to find other kid's teeth. Like, if I was getting paid that much every time.
It's like, well, where did this tooth come from? But that is going to be it for this Friday flight. We'll make sure to, we'll link to all the stories that we referenced during this episode up in our show notes at howtomoney.com. And we'll also include some of the different resources that we may have mentioned.
Yeah. And don't forget to sign up for the How to Money newsletter. Of course, comes out every Tuesday morning. It's wonderful. It's only getting better. And now you can refer your friends, win sweet prizes. So you can sign up for that at howtomoney.com/newsletter. But we'll see you back here on Monday. Have a great weekend. Matt, until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.